Hey, and welcome back to Lessons in Product Management. If you haven't subscribed yet, please hit that subscribe button. And if you're enjoying this content, I would be incredibly grateful if you'd be willing to become a monthly supporter of this podcast. For as little as 99 cents per month, you can help us grow and improve the overall podcast experience. Go to the show notes, scroll to the bottom, and click the support link to help us out. On today's episode, we get to hear from Dewey Pham, product manager at HR Easily. We'll hear about Dewey's really interesting path in the product, how to create organizational alignment through discovery, and the four quadrants of discovery that need to be considered to get a holistic picture of your customer and the market at large. This is Lessons in Product Management. Let's get started. Hey, Dewey, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me here.
Yeah, absolutely. Glad to have you, man. So before we dive into talking about discovery, give the listeners a background on yourself and what you're doing today in product, and maybe even how you got in.
Yeah, I think like how I got into product and actually got back into product, rather, it's really crisscrossing. I think it was right out of school, and I was an extremely bad student, by the way. I just was not that good at a student. But I graduated, and after I graduated, it's like, what am I gonna do with my life? It's just a point where I'd done so many things as a student other than actually studying well. And then I was like, well, I guess the answer for that is to study even more. And just right before I did that, because my degree is actually in Japanese language and literature, a friend actually introduced me to someone who was my first ever mentor. And he just finished, he actually was just on his way out of Rakuten in Japan. So he was senior product manager, very, very young for Rakuten, and he exited a few products for them. And he was working on an edtech product, and he was trying to rope me on, oh, you speak the languages that, the multiple languages, so that can be something that I can make use of. And I started off an internship with him. And, you know, like, it's just a really different thing when you start something from the ground up, right? It's just so many things you can cross into. And it was a big learning process for both me and him. Like, whatever he was learning, he also would just trickle it down, say, hey, learned this today, learned that today. And I think we start off as more with me focusing more on marketing, actually. And I was so overwhelmed. I think it's just in like the first, I think like in really early on, he already wanted me to do, he was actually helping crunch data already. Like I was working on interactive tables, that kind of thing, with Tableau as well. So it's like, oh God, what is this? but that quite quickly actually transitioned into more product and content management job, because the content part of what we were doing is very much part of our product as well. And there, it has to also cross into the actual games, because we were taking a very gamified approach to teaching languages, just like Duolingo. So they all has to come together at the end. So that was actually quite a product heavy post, which is something I didn't really realize later on. Because based on some recommendation, I actually decided to explore more working on the business side. So I went on to work at a venture builder, where I had the opportunity to be trained and work a lot as on the capacity, like a very junior entrepreneur in resident. That was a very interesting experience, because you get to touch a lot of points. Like, you get to work on investment pitch deck. You have to look at concept from the very beginning. There are things that very valuable as a product manager that the experience working on business side gave me, because you do know that I think this is actually on your on one of your podcasts as well, where someone brought up that I forgot their name and I fully apologize. I'm trying to find this later, but they say that there are three kinds of PMs, right? There's a user focused one, there's a business one, and there's a technical one. And it's something that the moment it was brought up to me is like, this makes so much sense. And to be able to work on that this high, it tests a lot of these business PM, BM experience that can really benefit you in the long run. So I'm really grateful for that experience. And actually, this is where I come back to how I come back to Prada, is where the next one, where I apply for a business role. But it's just turned out that that new product they were launching didn't really have a product team. And so like, I work out the structure. I do the day-to-day as a scrum master for you. And I slowly transition back into product where I fully took on the PM role. And yeah, and in the last few years, I'm fully back in product. And this is wonder, wow, why did I ever leave?
For sure. So you've worked for small startups in ed tech. You're working right now as a lead product manager, right, for an HR tech company that's bigger, right? It's like I saw around 200 plus employees. So you've seen product work at different levels of scale in an organization. And I'm curious from your perspective, as we dive into discovery, like how has those different perspectives shaped your philosophy of product and customer discovery?
I think the thing is, the first thing is that, and we're talking about different company, right? Mm-hmm. It's first is, what can the company afford to do? Sometimes I think if you're working in an organization where the people there are skilled, especially they know what Agile is and they have been practicing, they have worked in product development for quite a while, then they would practice some form of it, but it's depend on like based on the, so let's say that based on your budget, based on how much time you can afford to delay the launch, for example. I think there's a bit of noise in the background. My cat is playing, give me a moment. Sorry, baby. So then the time and the effort actually spent on product discovery could be a little bit different, and different organization based on the maturity of the leadership as well would actually uphold and value this product discovery differently as well. So that is what I have seen so far.
Okay, gotcha. So I've definitely seen that too, where depending on what organization you work for, there's different thoughts and feelings around discovery and investing time into it.
Yeah.
For those listening who are maybe just starting an organization or work for an organization that might not prioritize discovery like they should, do you have any advice to give them on like how to approach that or how to start maybe creating alignment with leadership around the yes. value of discovery?
Yeah, I think alignment is pretty much a first and foremost step that you have to do in product discovery. I think the biggest problem, it's just like how you are selling a product to the market. You actually have to sometimes even educate the market, but the most important thing is you make sure that you convince people this is what you want. And so which means that when you actually do this kind of alignment, what you're trying to do is to get everybody involved to understand the problem of we're trying to solve and how are we going to communicate that to them so everybody's on the same page. So I think this is something that can really easily be done with the business case. So because in a way you're pitching this to them anyway, so you work through a business case, and even in working through this business case, there has already been a lot of research already. Like it could be some just the first step from your side, whatever you can gather first. So from that business case, that's where you can actually come to the team and say, okay, I want you can review this. let me know what you think. And I want you to please take this seriously. And then after that, you can do a design sprint where you can actually go through all that together. But I think just from the beginning, if they are not buying into it, it's like, let's say that they think that it's a waste of time to do this kind of practice, when why don't we just try building it first? And I think this is a common thing in less mature team, where snappy decision are prefer, or they are resources that they can afford to burn. But I think a good argument for this as a product, if a product person, or even especially as a product leader, is like, well, it would be very discouraging for my team to actually work on something that's not going to be useful. And maybe it's something that you don't see yet, but as a team, we want to work on something that user value, but which actually make us feel valued, right? So I think a lot of it that you have to, the disalignment phase, or you have to actually, the first step is convince them that this is necessary in whichever way possible. And the moment that you can convince them this is a problem and what we're doing, it has a purpose to it, then I think the first step of alignment is already done. And after that, this whole alignment thing, what it's gonna be is make sure that everybody's on the same page. So which means that it requires our supposedly very excellent communication skill as product manager to get this through to them in writing, in our conversation, in our design sprints, all of these things, to make sure that they know what we're trying to do. And once we've gone through all the exercises together, everybody walk away and know exactly the same thing. So what this alignment will allow to do is a very valuable thing for your team, where it's allowed the rest of the stakeholder to be more hands-off in the development process. The moment it has this requirement and your team can have more freedom to do the work they need to do, which is a big pain point for development team. Like in the middle of the sprint, something is hooked in, people approaching them, breaking out of their flow. And as a product manager, as much as possible, you want to try to protect them from this, I guess. So this alignment actually allowed them to work more independently. It's allowed more autonomy to do their work. Yeah. So I think that's the biggest advantage of alignment.
Yeah, I like the practical advice you give around explaining how not doing discovery and shipping products that fail impact employee morale, right? That's a real thing, right? Like product teams want to know that what they're doing has impact. And I think there's another lens to potent, or another lever to potentially pull on, and it's the financial risk involved in not doing discovery. Right. Like if you have your own personal stories around assumptions you didn't test and validation you failed to do before shipping products.
Yeah.
And the outcomes of that.
Unfortunately, there are quite a few.
And I'm not saying you have to disclose them. I'm just saying in general, like if people have those, like those are powerful stories to share.
they are. And I'm not shy about sharing them either. And I think there's layers to this, right? Not aligning even from the beginning, that is fine. I mean, well, it's not fine, but at least you're aware that's what's happening. I think the worst part is sometimes on the surface act like it's aligned. On the surface, it seems like it's aligned, but then it's actually not. When there's a lot of time, a lot of people just like, yeah, they agree with something, just brush it off and then continue with their own mode of operation. So I think there are projects that has happened in the past, and let's say that there are our own example of doing like similar projects in the past that didn't yield any result. Some actually even involve, even result in us actually have to retire one of those projects. Like midway is like, well, we have run this for a while. It's actually has no proper science, there is no revenue stream coming on this at all. That has been a wasted few months of, you know, working on this on the side. And then that has become very abundantly clear to us that if we want to do this, it has to be done properly. And then that is something clear that we want to work on this very important infrastructural project that's related to building. I mean, that's one of the most important thing for any business. And we want to make sure that runs smoothly and that's runs in a more, you know, like state of the art way. We already agreed on that, but then midway through working on that, something was hooked in again. And it's one of those other projects that didn't work around the same time, just in a different location. And I was like, have you not seen what we have done so far with this? And okay, and do you also know this particular location is one of our weakest version? We have different versions throughout different countries. It's one of our weakest version. Our own data, empirical data, support that. But if you can present something that you know, support us doing this project, like, oh, any kind of projection, any kind of guarantee, or any even like other value that we get out of this, I can consider that. I would like to know those. I can bring those to the team. Well, and those never exist. But so in this particular story, on the surface, everybody say we should go with this infrastructural project that we have agreed for life of the longest time possible, over a year, that this has to be done at this point. And then at that very crucial point where we're close to finishing it, you hand something into our hand. And I was like, are you sure you're aligned with us, with what we're actually trying to do? I think there is a classics meme that I saw yesterday that it's just fully capture it. I think it's one of these, I think, let me look at it quickly. I think it's like CEO pushes impulse half-baked idea into the middle of the sprint. Tech team escalates that we're not following the process. CEO question to PM, why are we not following the process? And that is like, well, I guess it's not something that happened as rarely as I hope it would be. Yeah. So there could be so many pitfalls, but the most I think in my experience, the most dangerous one is one where it looks like you're aligned, but you're not actually aligned. So yeah. This is where you have to apply the product manager principle, where you have to ruthlessly do A, B, C, D. And this is where it's communication and make sure that you check in regularly on whether this alignment is still aligned. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. It's interesting that you bring up that point, right? Because I'm actively working on a book right now around mm-hmm. assumptions we should never make as product managers. Mm-hmm. And one of the chapters is never assume that you're aligned. And it dives into communication and stuff. But yeah, it is a big problem.
Yeah, well, I think alignment, it's part of the very important job of a PM to communicate. It's something that we don't really like spell out on daily. What we're trying to do is align, right? But that's actually the goal of communication. You're aligning things.
100%.
Yeah, but let us know when the book's going to be out. I'm excited to see it as well.
Oh, for sure. So a little shameless plug, it should be out early Q1 is the goal.
Oh, wow. That's very early. I mean, that's very soon. Have you worked on it for long?
Yeah, we're about 7 chapters in, should be about 10 chapters. So the initial draft is almost done. But yeah, great. So if anyone listening wants, and if you do want to see early copies of it, let me know. And if you're listening, send me an email at john@path2product.io. I'm looking to get early feedback so I can iterate on it and, you know, treating it like a product. I'm trying to get early feedback and
already did. Market.
So
okay.
Cool.
Okay.
Awesome. So kind of transitioning away from my selfish plug there.
Of course.
the last time The last time we talked, we talked about the way you view discovery, and I loved it and really want you to share it with the audience in terms of like the four kind of quadrants of research that you look at when you do discovery.
Yeah, I think like in terms of doing research of product discovery, it's nothing that is out of the ordinary when you're doing your UI UX research, right? So it's involved four questions here. So it would be so what you have, you have to have qualitative and quantitative data, and then you have to have research into behavioral and attitudinal research. The thing is, it's so easy when you design a research, you can just go into just center it based on one, either less than four, or even sometimes just one of these four quality. And because you're doing research, right, and you get result, and your result point toward a particular direction, then it's just like, oh, wow, well, we have an answer here. So, you know, like 700 people out of our 1,000 people that we interview say this. So that means something. But unfortunately, that can lead to you having skewed data, having skewed result or direction. So what is qualitative data? Qualitative data, and I think this is explained very well in one of your podcasts as well. I think it is with the one about UX research. Yeah, I think that's the one with Frank. I'm so bad with names. I think Frank his Spiller. Name is, yes, Frank Spiller. Yeah, I think that's the one where, so first for qualitative, when you actually have to observe how people go through, that's behavioral, sorry, I'm a bit erratic about this, but behavioral is when you look at how people, when they put in the situation, how do they proceed with something. Attitudinal is when you ask them certain thing, and attitudinal has a lot of different kind of psychological trigger to it. Behavior is all about subconscious trigger, is all about thing that people user are not necessarily consciously control when they go through certain tests. Attitudinal is you give them more of a question, and they actually have a bit more control over that, and they will give you an answer. And so that's those two kind of balance each other out. Yeah, and I think about qualitative. And qualitative and quantitative. I think the good example of this is, let's think about it. Qualitative data is what it is a direct observations, and quantitative is just indirect sampling of reality. So having all of these four coming together, you would have the best possible version of a result of the research that you're looking for. So yeah, so usually I would recommend that you design your research point around these four kind of pillar. And that would ensure you to have the best result for your research.
Cool. Yeah, no, I think it's spot on, right? Because a lot of times we get really narrow in our discovery focus, and it's like, let's just run user interviews, or heaven forbid, we think like discovery is just talking to stakeholders and collecting requirements. but actually looking through it in like a customer lens of saying, what is the quantitative data telling us what's happening? What is the qualitative data that's informing us of why it's happening? And then what actions do they display from behavior analytics, but whether that's through, there could be quantitative behavioral analytics, but also qualitative through tests that you run. And then attitudinal, I think the attitudinal part and behavioral part really can be kind of sussed out in some of those UX validation techniques, like you mentioned Frank Spiller, right, or talking about usability testing. There's just a lot to it, and that's one of the reasons why I want to do this season, is because I feel like there's so much to discovery. It's not limited to one thing, and it's certainly not asking your customers what to build for them, and it's certainly not asking stakeholders what you should build so they can close more deals. There's an actual like practice to discovery that has a whole world to open up around different types of techniques and tools you can use and frameworks.
I mean, like in terms of this kind of like balance, right? I mean, as product manager, especially if you are new to data crunching, for example, you get really obsessed with number. So which is quantitative data, right? And you're just like, oh, this say this and this say that. And you're just getting overexcited about it. It's like, oh yeah, I see what this number is telling me to do. But without qualitative data, where you actually plug those into context, right? Into what is the theory, what is the possible behavior, what is our other factor that might result in this number we're looking at right now, then we might make very skewed decision. And full stop, I have done that before.
I think we all have.
Yeah, so as product manager, I think sometimes you forget that you're not the all everything knowing person, right? Sometimes you really forget that you can be really the one that's leading people into a wrong direction. And so that's why having, again, the alignment with other teams, when they provide you these contexts or these even different kind of data, or that would actually help with everybody's point of view.
Totally. Yeah. I think instead of like omnipotent product manager, it's more like scientists, like one part scientist, one part investigative journalist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's honestly, I think that this probably is one of the most fun part in this whole process. And as being a product manager overall, this is when you get to play a lot.
Yeah. And what I love about your quadrant of research, right, where it's behavioral, attitudinal, qualitative, and quantitative, is it almost creates like this nice cycle. And I remember giving a talk like a couple of years ago about the virtuous cycle of qualitative and quantitative data, but adding those other two components in of behavioral and attitudinal almost like makes it a more complete circle, where let's say you start with quantitative data and you see what's happening, and then you follow up with qualitative data to find out why. And then you leverage qualitative data to say, like, to truly understand the problem and how you might go about addressing it. But then it flows into, okay, now we've tried to address the problem. And then the attitudinal part comes in of how do people think and feel about the way that we tried to solve this problem. And then behaviorally, how do those feelings impact the actions they take or inaction that they don't take?
Yeah, we're back. Yeah. So I think that whole quadrant of quality of research is quite important. Yeah. And I mean, like before, it's the same thing where I just look at quantitative and qualitative as well. The moment you bring on the whole behavior and attitudinal side, it just makes sense of so many of our things, because those two kind of edges exist both in qualitative and in quantitative. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree. It's definitely a level deeper into like the psychology of how of people, right?
Yeah.
And like at the end of the day, like I said, it's part scientist, part investigative journalist, but it's probably like a third part of psychologist. So.
I think that's one of my favorite things to do as a product manager. I mean, psychology has always been something that I'm so passionate about. And it's just something that people always say, oh, well, what about become a psychologist? It's like, well, little do you know, I'm already one. I'm already one working as a product manager.
That's funny.
Yeah.
So Dewey, I've enjoyed this conversation, man. I think you've given me and the listeners a lot to think about in terms of creating alignment and thinking through the different aspects of the quadrant of research. And I'm curious, as you've grown and learned in your practice of product management, are there resources that you turn to that you would suggest for the listeners to go look at if they want to learn more about discovery or just product management in general?
To be very honest, I mean, my way of learning, it has to be quite a good mix of doing my own reading, but actually bouncing off people. And I think I'm a person that's more into very much more interactive learning.
Okay.
So usually I just love to go to, product school has a lot of stuff that I follow, but product plan is one of the places I follow quite a lot. I read up quite a lot there, but in term of actually bouncing those people, I think there's so many product community there now, which is a very great luxury that we have. There's one that I follow quite a lot on Discord, and I think it has a very good mix of people, even aspiring one and the one that's quite experienced. And I think what I like about it, there's no shyness in sharing about whatever. I think it's also because for Discord it's a lot more anonymous. That's why people are a lot more comfortable sharing. And I think there are quite a few on Slack as well. So I actually can send you those servers, and maybe you can link in the description or something for people to join. Totally. But I mean, it's also we also met through a product manager group as well. So, you know, so yeah. I think the speaks for itself. I think that's what it is. And I think my last word would be, like, even though we touched upon like these two parts of product discovery actually still continues after that. And there are other very important aspects of doing it where you actually have to come up to an idea and the team has to align again on whether this idea is good. And then you have to follow through with doing prototype, and that's where your UX team becomes a lot more important. Yeah, so I think those things are things that we unfortunately didn't have time to cover in this session, but are things that still that our audience should know that still are very important things to do. There's still so many more steps. There's still so many more things for you to talk about in the season.
Yeah, no, you're spot on. I think there's like a whole gambit of generative user research that we touched on quite a bit, and then creating alignment around the need for research. But there's like evaluative research that you need to do, and discovery you need to do, and around evaluating the ideas you come up with that come out of the generative research that you've done. And I'd love to have you on for a part two to dive into more of the evaluative stuff.
Okay, great. Looking forward to that.
All right, Dewey. Well, thanks for coming on. I really appreciate the conversation.
Great. Hope see you guys soon. Bye.
I was Dewey Pham, product manager at HR Easily. Before you go, don't forget to subscribe. And if you want to become a monthly supporter of this podcast, you can do so for as little as 99 cents per month. Just go to the show notes, scroll to the bottom, and click the support link. Thanks for joining me today, and I'll see you next week on Lessons in Product Management.